Welcome to the Learn It All podcast. I'm Damon Lemby, the host of the show, and today we're going to do something different. I'm going to share with you an episode where I was a guest on somebody else's show, and the name of the podcast was The Unbeatable Podcast, and the host was Jeff Strucker. And I'm sharing this because it's one of the most candid, it is the most candid conversation I ever had on a podcast, and I did it because of who Jeff is. Jeff is a retired U.S. Army Ranger, and he's a true American hero. He served in 17 military tours over five wars. He played a critical role in Black Hawk Down, and he also was the U.S. Army Ranger of the Year in 1996. So when I was preparing to be on Jeff's show, I wanted to be as transparent and vulnerable as possible, and I thought we had a great conversation. And if you're a fan of the Learn It All podcast and you want to learn a little bit more about me, my background, and learn it, you're not going to want to miss this episode because we get into everything from my baseball career to how to overcome imposter syndrome, the success, massive success, my family's business, and the failure and dealing with that. And even at the end of the conversation, I share with his listeners a health challenge that I'm going through that I don't really love to talk about, but I hope in doing so that it can inspire somebody who maybe has something similar going on. And I hope the same thing here as you listen to this amazing conversation that I had with a true American hero, Jeff Strucker. So enjoy.
Okay, guys, I just met somebody who I instantly connected with. My guest on this episode of Unbeatable is Damon Lemby. And we connected over baseball. We connected about business and about leadership. We even connected about one of my favorite football players of all time, Joe Montana. But what really set this guy apart is the way that he handles challenges, the way that he goes through life. In fact, this guy inspires me to be a better leader and inspires me to handle challenges exactly the way that he does. I love everything that I heard in my conversation with Damon Lemby, and I hope you will too. Hey, before we get into this episode, let me remind you, we are only one episode away from bringing this podcast to a close and transitioning to a television show. And I want to give you more information, so check out this short video before we get into the interview.
Everyone, today I've got some big news to share. After 3 years of a weekly podcast interviewing some amazing guests, I'm going to make a huge transition. Man, your support to me over the last 3 years has meant the world. But as we move forward, I'm going to replace the Unbeatable podcast, both audio and video, with a television show. You don't have to live in the local area to watch this television show, because the television show is going to broadcast on the internet. It'll be available on Apple TV, on Roku, on Amazon. In fact, I'm launching an entire television channel called Jeff Strucker Ministries. Now, this new venture, it aims to empower lives. We're going to try to inspire people's faith, and I want to continue to try to make an impact, but this new venture is designed to make an eternal impact. And if you'll stay with me, and the entire Unbeatable Army will come with me, together we'll continue to inspire and uplift people. We'll create change that will last in people's lives over a lifetime. And we'll try to do something that will shake the foundations of heaven, that will matter into eternity. I just want to tell you thanks. Thanks for being so loyal to the podcast, and thanks for your continued support. Now, stay tuned for more updates about this television show, about the television channel that I'm creating to replace the Unbeatable podcast called Jeff Strucker Ministries. Can't wait for you to see it as we get ready to launch it in just a few weeks. See you guys.
And now here's my interview with this amazing guest, Damon Lemby.
These stories of triumph over adversity will help you handle your toughest days in life and become unbeatable.
Hey, Damon, thanks for joining me on this episode of Unbeatable, man.
Jeff, it's great to be here. I'm honored to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're going to talk baseball. We're going to talk business. We're going to talk about getting through some really intense difficulties in life because you've been through a couple of them.
Let's do it.
Like a pro baseball career, dreams of a pro baseball career that was crushed. And on top of that, a family's multi-billion dollar business that goes bust because of the economy. I mean, on the list of catastrophic things you've had, people have to walk through, you've got two or three of them at the top of the list, man.
Well, I think we all have our challenges, and not everything always goes exactly as planned in life. And it's just, I think, how you handle those challenges and get through them is what really matters.
For the fans out there that are listening, that are avid baseball followers like I am, you got drafted by the best and the worst teams in Major League Baseball. You got drafted by the Braves and the Yankees, and neither one of those two worked out for you. You should just know that I am a massive Atlanta Braves fan, which means in my house, you can cheer for anybody that you want. There's only one team that is entirely off limits. Don't you dare say anything positive about the New York Yankees because of what they did to the Atlanta Braves in the 1990s, World Series after World Series. They crushed my dreams year after year after year. And I am the world's most rabid New York Yankees hater out there.
Who's your favorite Atlanta Braves of all time player?
Sid Bream.
Sid Bream, first baseman.
I was first baseman. Yeah, I know. He is the slowest, just the blue collar, slowest, most untalented guy in Major League Baseball that just worked hard and ended up putting the Braves in the world, in the World Series in 1991. By lumbering around the bases in Game 7 of the championship series. And yeah, I'm a Sid Bream fan just because of his blue-collar work ethic.
I love it.
Okay, so let's go back to the beginning. You played baseball for 22 years and had dreams of being able to play. In fact, you should have been able to play in the big leagues, in Major League Ball, but it didn't work out for you. Let's talk about how those baseball dreams crashed around you.
So essentially, I grew up in the San Francisco Bay Area, and I was a big sports guy, local sports guy, baseball, football, basketball, played all of them. All my buddies were athletes.
Wait, you played basketball, baseball, and football?
Yeah, I was, these are my glory days,
man,
Jeff.
Talent just dripping out of every pore of your body if you could do those three.
My wife's going to be like, oh my God, here he goes again, talking about himself. My glory days. Yeah, I was a varsity baseball and basketball all 4 years and in high school. But I really realized by my sophomore year in high school that my ticket to playing in college and maybe even the pros, it wasn't basketball, it was baseball. So I really went all in on baseball and worked really, really hard. And it turned out to work out well for me. I was a high school All-American. And as you mentioned, at the end of my high school senior year, which is in 1990, I was drafted by the Atlanta Braves in the 13th round. And I really had the first tough decision in my life. And that was, do I want to go the minor league route or do I want to, I had a full ride scholarship to Pepperdine University to play there.
Great school. Yeah.
Great school. And the coach at the time, Hall of Fame coach, Andy Lopez, I mean, Pepperdine's a small school. It's like 2,500 people. Mm-hmm. And he was like, we're going to win the College World Series. You're going to be a big part of it. And he had this crazy moonshot vision. And so I went with that. I went and I took the full ride to Pepperdine. And that's really where my college baseball career started.
If I just heard you correctly, you were drafted by the Braves in 1990, which means you could have been the guy helping the Braves defeat the Yankees in one of those World Series.
Well, I would have been 18. Oh, yeah.
But so was Tom Glavine, so now I'm angry with you for going to Pepperdine instead of going to Atlanta or to the farm club anyway.
I would have been the year I was drafted, I was the 13th pick. Chipper Jones was the first pick of the draft.
Look at that. Yeah.
And him and I would have played together at Pulaski, West Virginia. He was a shortstop. I would have been a first baseman. So yeah, I missed the opportunity to play with him.
You grew up watching and sports in the Bay Area, which means if I'm doing my math correctly, you grew up watching Joe Montana and Steve Young take the 49ers and just do, incredible, legendary feats with those two amazing quarterbacks. Joe Montana is still my favorite quarterback of all time. Jeff, him and Johnny U.
Talking about my family business, Joe Montana was our corporate sponsor.
No way.
For 10 years.
Oh, and my goodness. You got a chance to meet him.
I got to know him very, very well.
Wow.
And he's my absolute idol. Him and Dwight Clark were our sponsors, corporate sponsors. And it, right after I was at the game at the catch where he made it, against the Cowboys. And then I got to meet him. Absolute idol. Joe Montana would come to our house for Christmas
Eve. Oh, man.
And he is a great, great man.
Yeah. Not just a great ball player, but just a great human being.
Yes.
I am fanboy right now on this, Damon, because of your ability to get a chance to meet one of the greatest guys to play the game in all times.
I think he is the best.
Okay. Let's go back to baseball.
Yeah.
You had a chance to go to the big leagues, went to Pepperdine. And by the way, you did pretty well playing college ball and get a chance to go to the big leagues again. Just talk a little bit about your college career.
So I get to Pepperdine, and like I said, I was a high school American, and I get there. But Jeff, really for the first time in my life, everybody was as good as I was. Everybody was the elite players. And for the first time in my life, I really struggled with imposter syndrome. I was afraid to go out onto the field. I really doubted my ability, and I really struggled. And I remember this was in the preseason. We had our first sit down with our coaches, kind of like a performance review. And Coach Lopez called me in. I remember like this was yesterday. Calls me in and he says, "Lemby, sit down." So I sat down, and I was already struggling during the preseason. And before I had a chance to say anything, he said, "Hey, Damon, when I recruited you here to Pepperdine, I did so because I believed that you had the ability to be a great Division I third baseman, that you could hit in the middle of our lineup, and that you were going to help us reach our goal of a College World Series. But son, I made a mistake." And he crossed his arms, and he sat back, and he said, "You don't have what it takes to play Division I baseball."
Oh, man.
And so, Jeff, I was just shocked,
There's a knife to your heart right there.
And I was thinking to myself, how do I get out of here? How do I get on the first bus home and everything? Then he leaned forward, he pointed at me, and he said, "That's not what I think. The problem is that's what's in your head. Our coaches and I, we see your talent. You have the ability. You can be great here. But until you get out of your own head and you get over the self-doubt that you have and you just go out on the field and play, there's nothing we can do for you, son. There's nothing you can do. You need to get off your butt and turn it around." And I'd like to tell you that I immediately left that office and it struck me and I turned it right around. I didn't actually. I got hurt in the preseason. I ended up leaving Pepperdine, going to a junior college for a year. And by the way, they won the College World Series that year that I left.
Sure.
Which was, of course, but also that great vision that Coach Lopez had. But I was fortunate enough. I had a good junior college career. I got picked up by Arizona State, which is one of the top schools in the country. And I got a full ride there. And a lot of my friends and people I knew would say, "Hey, Damon, don't go to Arizona State. There are going to be 17 guys trying out for first base. Go to a small school. Go to St. Mary's. Go to some place you can play, finish up your baseball career and move on with life." And I said to myself, "This is my last shot. This is my last shot. So I'm going to go for it. I'm going to go all in." And I took the scholarship to Arizona State, and it was a game changer for me. I was the first guy on the field. I was the last one to leave. It helped me really develop a framework for overcoming imposter syndrome that I've used throughout my entire life. But I just outworked everybody, really. And because of it, it helped me build up the confidence I needed to do to be successful. And I was able to, I was number two or three in the league in hitting and hit a home run in the College World Series. And we ended up losing to Georgia Tech and Oklahoma, but it was a tremendous experience.
Okay, I need a baseball card now because I love the hard workers. There are people that just have incredible athletic ability. And it looks like when they play the game, doesn't matter what the sport is, that it's just effortless for them. And then there are the guys and gals out there on the court or on the field that it is obvious they're giving it 100% effort, and they give every practice 100% effort because they don't have the talent that that person next to them has. So they got to just work their way onto the active roster, work their way onto the field. And the people that work their way onto the field are always far more impressive to me than the guy or the gal that just has talent, a natural talent, and you know they can effortlessly do what everybody else out there has to spend an unlimited amount of hours working on.
And that natural talent, Jeff, catches up with you after a while.
Yeah,
I've seen some guys that I've played with and played against who would stroll out onto the field with their Jack in the Box bag, hungover from the night before, who in college could crush it. You know, they were first round draft choices, they could crush it. But by the time they got to the minor leagues or to the big leagues, they didn't have the work ethic or the mindset.
Yep.
The work ethic, and they didn't have the mindset, and then they failed. So some of the most talented individuals I've ever played with never made it because they lacked the mindset and the competitiveness, because they just relied on their natural talent.
Absolutely.
Their whole life.
Yep. You described imposter syndrome. So you showed up to college sports with this imposter syndrome. It was so obvious that a guy like Coach Lopez noticed it. And by the way, I don't even know who this coach is, but I love this coach for recognizing something inside of you and calling it out so that you can become the great ball player that you need to be. That's the job of a coach. But there are people that are in business. There are moms that are trying to look pretty and skinny and have a perfect family. And it's every single walk of life because of the pressures of social media that people are going through life with the imposter syndrome. Would you take a moment, let's back up for just a second, and describe what it took for you to get out of your own head, in Coach Lopez's words, and get over this imposter syndrome and just be the ball player, the best ball player that you can be?
Yeah, and you're right. You know, whether, like you said, it's a mother, or whether it's somebody who's recently promoted to a position and they don't believe that they're qualified to be in, or they're, you know, they're struggling with limited beliefs or self-doubts. For me, what it really took was, it was really my last shot at Arizona State. That was it for me. And I said to myself, I have really nothing left to lose when it comes to baseball. So what I did is, and I've used this my whole, you know, professional career now too, is I kind of came up with a three-step formula. Well, before the formula, first thing I had to do is label my fear. What am I really afraid of? You know, what am I afraid of? I'm afraid of failing at baseball. Okay, wait, great. Worst case scenario, I just move on with my life. Okay, so not a big deal. So then step number one is really work hard. We just talked about this. There's no replacement for hard work.
Absolutely. 100%.
Absolutely. Number two is deliberate practice, focus. A lot of times, you know, if there's something that you want to overcome or you want to do, it's easy to procrastinate, right? I mean, you can go do something else. You could turn on the TV. You could start scrolling on Instagram. But if you really want to overcome something, you need to have deliberate practice. And once you've worked hard and you put in a deliberate practice, when it's game time, so to speak, learn and let go. Just go on the field. Stop, get out of your head. Stop thinking about techniques and, you know, either how you're going to hit the ball or, you know, how you're going to speak during your presentation, and just go for it. Do the best you can do. And you may do great. You may fall on your face, but so what? Take each opportunity as a learning opportunity. I'm a big believer that real growth happens through failure anyways. So learn from those failures. And by the way, you should be proud of yourself for trying, for getting out there and doing things, getting out of your comfort zone, where so many other people are afraid to even take that chance. So work hard, put in a deliberate practice, and then go out, learn, and let go, and just give it your best shot.
Okay. I did not miss this word. There are people that are driving in traffic right now listening to this on the radio. They may have missed this word. I want to slow down for just a second and make sure that they don't miss what you're saying. Step two, step one is work hard. And what we're both saying is there is no substitute for hard work. It doesn't matter if you are the smartest or the most talented person on the planet. You cannot achieve greatness without putting the work in too. Totally agree. But step two is not just practice. It's deliberate practice. And I wrote the word deliberate down when you were talking and underlined it because there's a big difference than just going out in the ball field and practicing some drills or deliberately practicing some drills. I know the difference, but I want to make sure that the audience hears the difference. What is the difference between just going through some drills in practice and doing some deliberate practice?
Let's use it from a business perspective. Let's say that I've got to give a keynote presentation and it's 15 minutes long and a lot of it is like second nature for me. But let's say that there's a piece of it that is difficult and that I've struggled with. Deliberate practice is really honing in and focusing in on what you're having a challenge with. You know, putting in the extra effort, practicing that, you know, having somebody role play with you on that and really hammering away at that until you get better, you know, asking for feedback and keep adjusting and getting better and better. If you want to use a baseball analogy, for me, I struggled with hitting curveballs. So I'd put in deliberate practice where I'd have a coach throw me 150 curveballs one after the other, right? And until that's deliberate practice. It's really focusing in on what has challenged you the most. Yes, focusing on one thing. And maybe if you get better at that, then move to the next thing. But don't try to boil the ocean and try to do everything all at once. Just hone in on what you need to get better at.
I've never heard this phrase before, boil the ocean. I'm writing this down because I like that analogy. I did the Best Ranger competition for a few years, and I basically spent 4 years of my life preparing for this competition. The world's greatest military athletes, quite literally, it's open to everyone in the world, part of the NATO countries, and anyone who's gone through this, you know, extreme level of military training. And before I did the Best Ranger competition the first time, I looked around at all of the other competitors and I was asking myself, why the heck am I here? I do not look like these guys. I do not have the skills that these guys have. But I put the work in and I was very, very deliberate about the work. If I'm going to be able to succeed on this event, I need to practice this thing today. And when I get better at this, I'll move on to the next part of this event and the next part of this event. Anyway, I want to make sure that the audience hears step three, because in my opinion, this separates the champions and the highly successful people from everybody else. There is a moment that I had to decide, Jeff, if you really want to know how this thing is going to turn out, the only way you're going to find out is if you just let it all, I use this analogy, let it all fly. When that gun goes off on Friday morning, you just let it all fly. And I don't know if I'm going to be in first place, last place, or DNF, did not finish, but I do know this, I'm going to let it all fly. And when it's over with, whatever happens next, I can at least say I held nothing back. Very few people are really willing when it's game time to absolutely go all in and let it all fly, because it's embarrassing, right? If it doesn't work out. I take the opposite approach. I love your step three. The opposite approach for me is if I let it all fly and it doesn't work out, I've got absolutely nothing to be ashamed about because I just gave it my best and my best wasn't good enough.
So how do we, Jeff, get other people to understand that?
Yeah, the challenge here is if I don't let it all fly, it doesn't matter where I finish. It doesn't matter if I finished in first place. If I didn't let it all fly, I never really got a chance to see what I was capable of. And I think you boiled the essence down to, are you really willing to take the risk? And the risk is, I'm going to give this one thing everything that I've got, and it may blow up in my face. But it's worth giving it everything that I've got. And by the way, I want to know what I'm truly capable of. And the only way to find that out is to let it all go or let it all fly. And that, I think, is why people hold back. They're not willing to take the risk.
I agree with you. I think they're not willing to take the risk. And that's something I really learned more over the years, is just to stop comparing yourself to other people. Stop worrying about what other people have to think about you, and just go out there, go all in. And like you just said, let it fly. And it's fun, because if you know that you've left it all on the table, then pat yourself on the back. Like, hey, you did it, man. You tried. That's and I try to teach my little daughter that, who's 6 years old. She had like this little bike race, and she's like, Daddy, what happens if I don't win? And I said, who cares? I said, like, honey, I said, Lucy, I don't care if you win. I just want you to go out there. I want you to do your very best, and I want you to have fun. And the funniest thing is, she did. She goes out there. She does it. I think she finished in like fourth or fifth place, and they gave her a medal. And nice. she had her arms up in the air.
Like she just conquered the world, right?
Like she just conquered the world, because, you know, as a parent, I think this is important for your audience and for your listeners. Yes, I want to win. I'm very competitive. I always want to win. But at the end of the day, I want my kids to go out there and give it their best shot. You know, leave it all on the field.
Yeah. And you and I think, both can say this to people who are listening, who tend to hold back just a little bit because they're worried about whether or not they're good enough to be able to meet the challenge. The truth is, I would never, ever have been able to figure out what my real capabilities were if it wasn't for those times where I just decided, that's it, I'm going to let it all go, and we're going to see what happens next. And I may be in the hospital tomorrow morning. I may be on the first, I may be at on first place, you know, with them, you know, putting an award around my neck. I don't know, but I do know this. Tomorrow morning, I'm going to find out what I'm really capable of. And there's only one way to do that. There's no shortcut to this. You just have to decide, I'm going to let it all go, and we're going to see how this thing turns out.
And you won, right, in 1996?
Yes, but it took me, I should say to the audience, it took me 3 years. I finished fourth place in 94 and 95, and I was convinced, that's it. I'm a fourth place guy. I'm never going to be more than a fourth place guy. And then in 1996, I let it all fly again and ended up in first place. But it's just because I was willing to say, I'm going to give it everything that I got.
That's a great story, and it's so true. And you can't really, again, getting back to the learning part of it, you learn what you're capable of, and two, you also learn how you can continue to get better and improve. And you can't do that if you don't leave it all out on the field.
By the way, a lot of times, just for the audience out there, you and I already know this, a lot of times it's not going to be good enough, and your best will not be enough, and you're going to fail. And probably the most powerful lessons in my life, every single one of them came from the times that I failed, not from the times that I succeeded. It was the times that I gave it everything that I had and I failed that really taught me lessons that have stayed with me for the rest of my life. So even those moments, I wouldn't trade them for the world.
I agree. I mean, you learn so much from failure. And I think one thing that's important out there, especially for parents, is I was talking to this guy I know, and his kid didn't make the baseball team. He tried out. He didn't make the baseball team. Instead of owning up to not making the baseball team, he blamed it on, oh, the coach liked a different kid instead. You know, your kid didn't make the baseball team because he didn't work hard enough, or he's just maybe not good enough right now, right? So, but the kid's 10 years old. There's plenty of time to get out there, but let's not start making excuses already for the situation. Let's get them in the right mindset. And like you said, fourth place, boom, you won.
Well, to put this into perspective, you'll remember this. There was a North Carolina high school basketball player that wasn't good enough to make the high school team and got cut from the team. And he could have just said, that's it, I'm not good enough. Or he could have just blamed it on the coach. The coach doesn't like me. But instead, he decided to go back and start shooting hoops and start, you know, working some drills and start practicing harder so that next year he did make the team. You know who I'm talking about, right?
I texted my friend that article.
No, you didn't.
Michael, I swear, I'm not making that up. I texted him that article. I said, did you know that Michael Jordan was cut from his high school basketball team?
Yeah. And Michael Jordan could have said, you know what? It's not good. I'm not good enough. Or my coach is a jerk and he doesn't like me. Instead, Michael Jordan did the work. He deliberately practiced. And then when he came back next year, he let it all go. And he became the greatest basketball player in history. And
Probably because he got cut from the team. Had he not got cut, who knows? Maybe he never becomes the greatest, maybe one of the greatest, but not the greatest. For all of you LeBron James fans out there, I still believe Michael Jordan's the greatest basketball player to ever live.
Hands down. And the other thing I think that Michael Jordan did is he took that being cut, and instead of taking that energy and being negative about it, he took it and he used that as his incentive and his passion and his fire to hit the gym every day. And like you said, I think that's probably one of the reasons why he's the greatest of all time.
Yeah. How does your baseball career turn out? Because we've already said it. You have this dream to play major league ball, and it never happens for you. Tell everybody what happens after hitting a home run in the College World Series and then ending your baseball career.
So basically, I went out, hit a home run in the College World Series, and I was projected to be drafted in the 8th to 10th round, probably by the Philadelphia Phillies. And it was during the College World Series that the draft was happening. And remember, this was 1994, so there was no internet. So we're all sitting in our hotel room waiting for our calls.
Waiting for a phone call, yeah.
Waiting for our phone calls. My roommate and one of my best friends is a guy named Jacob Cruz, played 10 years in the big leagues. And he got his call early in the morning, and it was for the San Francisco Giants first round pick. 15 other guys on my team were drafted. I never got the call. And it was depressing. You know, it was sad. And I couldn't believe it. And I think at the end of the day, people are like, what do you think happened? I think maybe they just thought that I hit my peak, right?
You peaked too early. Yeah.
But at the end of the day, this was before Moneyball. I always was of the opinion that you can keep competing and playing until you just weren't able to, you know, do well enough. And so here I am, 22 years old, my baseball career ended. Now I could have went down the independent path. You know, my dad kind of wanted me to, but
go play ball in Japan, basically.
Exactly. Go play ball in Japan or do something. But at that point, here I was, 22 years old, Jeff. I went all in on baseball. It was the only thing I ever knew. It's the only thing I've ever done. And my identity was tied to being a baseball player. And a lot of my good friends were moving on to the minor leagues and the big leagues. I remember going out and watching Jacob a year later at Candlestick Park hit a home run against Tom Candiotti. But Jacob's like, man, you could hit these guys. You know, it's not fair that you're not out here. But anyways, that was it. So my baseball career ends. I'm not really sure. And if any of you athletes are out there, I wasn't really sure if my talent or my skill set was transferable into the business world, right? I didn't know. I wasn't a great student and anything like that. And so with that, I was fortunate. I came from a family who had a lot of successful businesses, real estate, hotels, you know, shopping centers, all this kind of stuff. But at the time, my dad was starting this computer training company called Learn It. So I took a job there as a receptionist because I wanted to start at the ground floor. I didn't want to be like, okay, this is Walt Lemby's son. They're going to, you know, put him in a big role. And quite frankly, again, I didn't know what my skills were like. So I just went to the front desk, and just like in baseball, and maybe that's just how I am. I mean, I'm still here 29 years later. When I do something, I just typically just go all in and I just give it everything I got, you know, and I'm laser focused on really trying to be the best that I can do. And so I started off as a receptionist there. And it was interesting, Jeff, because, and I'm sure it's like this with the Army too, you know, I was just shocked at the lack of work ethic from a lot of the people in the professional world. You know, people not showing up on time, you know, lack of discipline, lack of collaboration and teamwork. I'm like, what's going on around this place? And I was like, this is one of my family businesses. I don't want this investment to go to waste. So I just worked hard. I answered the phones. I learned how to teach computer classes, which back in the day, we barely had computers in those days. And I did sales. And 3 or 4 years into it, the guy who was running it wasn't, you know, they asked him to leave, and the board was looking for a new CEO. So I threw my hat in the ring and I said, I've done this, 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 and this. And my dad's like, all right, kid, we'll give you the shot. And so I've been the CEO of Learn It, which is a live learning platform. And we've trained like 2 million people, including the Army Rangers, by the way. We had a couple years in a row cohorts from up in Washington go through. So I got to meet a bunch of the gentlemen. They're awesome. And so that's really what we do. We do leadership training, and I've been running Learn It for 29 years. And what I want to say to your audience, athletes, and even if you're a, you know, eighth grade athlete, high school or college, the skills that you learn playing sports are 100% transferable to your rest of your life.
I've been trying to communicate that message for what seems like decades now. Leadership is leadership. It doesn't matter if it's on a ball team or if it's in a business or if it's in politics, whatever. Leadership is leadership, and the skills are 100% transferable. You have to be able to, you know, use different vocabulary for the same, you know, things, but leadership is leadership.
And maybe a different approach. I don't think I reconnect with Andy Lopez, 30 years later for Pepperdine. And he's like, do you think my approach to running a Learn It would work? I'm like, well, probably not.
you might have to take a bit of a different approach, right?
Yeah, you had to take it down a little bit. But hey, I'm beyond grateful for playing for three Hall of Fame coaches, and they showed a lot of tough love. But there's nothing in the world I would replace for that, those learning opportunities and lessons I learned.
Okay, for the audience, you just heard a couple of really important points that I want to go back and drill in on. Your dreams of playing Major League Baseball are crushed. I want to know how humbling it was to start at the receptionist level of a family-owned company. Listen, man, you could have rode your dad's shirt tails. You could have demanded respect and a big fat paycheck and a private parking spot. But instead, you choose to answer the phones. That alone puts you really high in my regard, Damon. But I want to know what it felt like being the guy answering the phones for a month or two after everything that you've hoped for. Literally, your entire life was all built to play Major League Ball, and that came crumbling around you. What was going on in your mind when you were answering phones for those first couple of months?
I answered the phones for 2 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I'm the oldest of four kids. You know, I'm very fortunate to come from the family I came from. And I'm also very fortunate that my parents, both my mom and my dad, raised us right. They raised us to treat other people with respect, to treat everybody the same. You take my father, who's a huge business guy, but he liked the underdogs, Jeff. He liked the everyday person. And, he just taught us to be respectful and be grateful for what you had. You're not better than anybody else. You got to work for what you got. And I just hope that my kids are 6 and 3. I really hope that I can install that kind of behavior in them that my parents did. So yes, it was very tough starting off at the front desk. After it was super humbling. I mean, I was a 20-year-old cocky.
A guy who wanted to stand on top of the world, and now you're answering phones in your dad's company.
Arizona State, right? You know, I mean, it's the most beautiful girls in the world. They're coming to all the baseball games. I mean, how could top of the world, and I'm a receptionist. But I wanted to do that because I didn't want to feel like I had a silver spoon in my mouth and I was just put up there like you said, with the big paycheck. And I wanted to earn the respect of the other. At the time, there's 25 people. I wanted to roll up my sleeves and show them. And I think this is important for your audience too, whether you're a small business owner, entrepreneur, or running a team. By answering the phones, teaching classes, helping out with the computers, doing sales, it helped me as a leader in the future because I helped learn empathy for what people would do in their different roles.
Yeah.
And you could connect better with them. And
Absolutely. So
do all the work. And I was always been a leader who I wouldn't expect anybody to do something that I wouldn't do myself. And I wouldn't do it all over again. I wouldn't do any different. I'm glad I started where I did. It was humbling. I just kind of, you know, that's just the way it worked.
The greatest leaders I've ever met, all of them share the same thing in common. They've all worked their way through the levels of the organization. And almost every one of them started at the very bottom, in the mailroom or answering phones. And then they moved up, and then they moved up some more, and then they moved up some more. And all along the way, they were learning and growing. But that also makes them able to relate to people at every level of an organization. And that's
100%.
You.
100%. Yeah, absolutely. Because people want to work for people that they trust. And they want to, you know, I can't speak to what you did at the Army, which is just beyond incredible. But from the work perspective, it's like they want to feel like they're going to battle with people that have their backs, right? That support them. They're not working in a silo. You're working together. that if you fail, that your leader is going to be there and help you with it. You know, not some prima donna who sits in the corporate office and takes all the praise and pushes out the blame on everybody else. They want somebody who has their back, works with them, and believes in them.
Yeah, and that is true for human nature. Everybody wants to work in an environment like that. We're going to get into Learn It in just a second, because Learn It has gone through a couple of really significant social challenges, and you've had to lead them through those. But I know there's some people that are listening right now. They're saying Damon comes from money, and his dad and mom had it made, so he's had a silver spoon in his mouth, and it's always been easy. And maybe some of those folks don't understand that, yeah, my family owned a multi-billion dollar company, and it seems like it's all roses. But with that kind of influence and that kind of resources comes a lot of responsibility. Like when a multi-billion dollar company goes bankrupt in 2009 because of the Great Recession, and you know this is a lot of people's livelihoods that just come crashing in. Before we get into the challenges you had to lead Learn It through, can you talk about what this felt like for your family when the family business, you know, went south?
Yeah, it went south. So our family business, we were one of the largest real estate companies in San Francisco. Started with my grandfather in the 40s, Frank Lemby, fought in World War II, both tours.
All right.
Came from nothing. You know, Jeff, he was as tough as can be. And he built this real estate empire, so to speak. And my dad did a wonderful job too. And long story short, in 2009, with the Great Recession, interest rates were up, you know, and just got over leveraged. And unfortunately, it all came crashing down. And it's interesting because in today's, a lot of the companies who picked up a lot of our portfolio, they're kind of struggling with the same thing now, you know. But it was totally humbling, and it was terrible. But that's just the way it goes. We gave it our best. I was incredibly grateful for the opportunities it's created, for the experiences, and it was just a really challenging time because not only was it, you know, on the front page of the Wall Street Journal and local papers and everything, what was going on, my dad was also dying of cancer at the same time.
Wow,
at 61 years old. And nobody's going to feel like sorry.
Nobody feels sorry for him.
No,
right?
Nobody feels sorry for a rich kid like me. Let's be honest, right? You know, I mean, who people might perceive has a silver spoon. But it was a great learning experience. It was incredibly humble. And it's just one of those lessons, I think, in life, Jeff, where everything doesn't turn out the way you planned, right? You know, I thought that we have this great family business, besides just Learn It, and that my dad would be around to see my kids be raised and everything. But things don't always turn out the way you want them to. But I'm grateful for the opportunity and the experiences that we've been able to have. I've been able to experience work-related, be in meetings as a fly on the wall with my father and up in Wall Street and other areas, and just incredible experiences. And I've made a great network of his friends who have all been mentors to me. So I choose to look at the positives. And there's a lot of people who are affected by their work lost. But I'd also say that most of those people would come back and talk about the positive times working for my dad. Now, my grandfather, they might say Frank Lemby was a tough person, but there's so many of them who would say that they got their start at Skyline Realty or the hotels. And yes, maybe they had to go through a transition too, but I think that they had a great learning experience as well, most of them. So I'm proud for what my family accomplished. I'm disappointed that it didn't work out, of course. But at the end of the day, Jeff, like my brothers and sisters would tell you, I'm the oldest of four. Hey, we need to make it on our own anyways.
Right.
So, you know, let's be grateful for what we had and keep pushing forward.
That's exactly what I wanted the audience to hear. There are people that are thinking, oh, when your family owns a multi-billion dollar company, you never, ever have to struggle. Everything is always going to come easy for you for the rest of your life. And I wanted them to hear, oh, really? What happens when that multi-billion dollar company goes bust and your family's name is on the front page of the San Francisco Chronicle and the Wall Street Journal, there's never a time in life where everything is easy and you don't have any problems. There are people that think when you have a lot of money that you never have problems, but that just simply isn't true.
I can't tell you. I've been a lot of times I'd go to dinner in the city and somebody would introduce me and they would say, Damon Lemby, are you related to Frank Lemby? And I said, yeah, that was my grandfather. And they're like, wow, I mean, that really sucks what happened to your business. That must be hard. Not a lot of empathy for you, right? There, but I just kind of shrug it off and say, yeah, it sucks. But, you know, just I choose to focus on the positive moving forward and grateful for what we had. And yeah, it's our responsibility, my responsibility to lead, learn it. My brother does a great job with his business. My sisters do. And so we fortunately didn't take the lucky spoon, you know, approach. We just wanted to have our own lives. And if we would have just sat back and on our heels and, you know, had our hand out, I think it would be four different kids than we are today.
Okay, so let's get into Learn It now, because you picked up Learn It early on, you know, before online education, before really online anything was highly successful. And because of that, you've had to go through some periods of huge challenges. I'm talking about the dot-com bust. I'm talking about the economy's downturn and what COVID and what you and I would know as the Great Resignation, the Great Recession, and then the Great Resignation. Every one of those could have tanked your company, should have tanked your company, but you've been able to lead this thing for 29 years and lead it well. You've obviously had to lead through some really troubled waters. Can you describe a little bit of what it felt like going through some of those difficulties?
Well, back in the dot-com days, for those of you who recalled, it was around 2000, 2002.
That's for all of the young bucks. This is back when all of those huge internet companies were going bankrupt, literally day after day after day.
Yeah, and they were only huge on paper, by the way. You know, and so as a young CEO at the time, and a lot of my friends were working for these companies, and they were paper millionaires. You know, they were making a ton of money and everything, and Learn It was doing good. We were more of a brick and mortar company, and I wanted to expand. And so I said, let's open up more locations. And my dad's like, hey, you know, bigger isn't always better. It's tougher to expand. But he you know, he listened to me, unfortunately, and we opened up a bunch of locations. And then the economy kind of crashed. And I'll be honest, if it wasn't for the first go around of having family backing, I wouldn't have made it through the first time.
Now you got to pay mortgages on a whole lot of locations that are not not breaking even.
And it was hard. I'd have to call my dad and my grandfather maybe once or twice a month, and they put me on a speakerphone, and my grandfather would be like, "What's going on, kid?" And I'd say, "Hey, Gramps, I'm doing good. Can I please borrow $10,000 to cover payroll?" And he'd just blow up at me. But my dad's like, hey, you know what? I believe in Learn It. Learn It's it's going to make it through. Just keep working hard. And that's what we did. And from 2004 on, I never had to borrow any money from them. And by the time in 2009 happened, I learned from the mistakes we made, Jeff, the last time, right? I learned from it. And I knew with my family's business blowing up the way it was that I didn't have the resources and the backing as before. So I looked at what happened in 2000. And I said, we need to get ahead of this. So as tough as it was, we had about 70 employees. We called it Black Monday in January. I had to let go 25% of the staff. I sat down with each individual and, you know, spoke to them directly. I wasn't going to put that on anybody else. And then everybody else took a 20% pay cut. And I probably didn't pay myself for 3 or 4 months. Learning from that. And I told the team, because I wanted to rip off the Band-Aid. I didn't want to do it, you know, let some people go, and then 2 weeks later, let some more people. I just said, hey, team, we've made the changes we've had to make, and this is what's going to get us through all this. And so we got together as a team, and we pulled through, and we made it, and we were successful. And everything, you know, Learn It evolved over the years from being just a computer training company to doing soft skills training, leadership, and everything. And then again, getting into the challenging times, you with COVID, you know, we're mostly an instructor-led in-person training company. Well, COVID happens. The next thing you know, everything is done. Everything is gone. And we had to immediately pivot to doing virtual training. Fortunately for us, we were kind of a pioneer, I wouldn't say pioneer, but we were one of the first ones who were doing online training. And so we were able to adapt and we were able to all go virtual. But it was, you know, for the first 6 months, it was very difficult to get our customers, you know, all B2B customers, because they're like, well, how are you going to learn emotional intelligence virtually? How are you going to learn how to communicate or leadership? And so we just hung on. We serviced our customers however we can. And I was able to negotiate our way out of our lease in San Francisco, which was super expensive. And we pivoted to a remote first company, and Learned's been a remote first company ever since. I mean, quite frankly, Jeff, I miss being in the office more often. But with the cat getting out of the bag with the remote, you just, as a leader, I think sometimes you have to adjust and adapt, especially with the younger generations who want that flexibility. And so I think leadership and business and life in general is just a series of ups and downs, changes, and you need to be flexible and adapt. And that's kind of like what we've done at Learn It over the years. Yeah.
I recognize this is a massive philosophical shift. I did an episode several months ago with a friend of mine, Brent Crow, who helps lead a company that is nothing but large in-person events. And then when COVID happened, they had to figure out, how are we going to survive this? And honestly, if it wasn't for their courage and their willingness to embrace the challenge, they wouldn't be around today. They're doing great today. But when you're a in-person training company and you have to switch to virtual, that's a massive philosophical shift. And many companies just couldn't make that shift and they didn't survive because of it. They had all kinds of capital in the bank, but they just philosophically couldn't make the change and they didn't survive. You guys did. What did it take for you to lead the company through a radical shift in the way we're going to do business?
Well, one story that I think about was, I was listening to, I think it was Pat Lencioni. He's got a great podcast. And he was talking about, you know, at the beginning of COVID, you have two options. If you're a basketball player, you could sit on the couch and watch TV, or you can go to the gym and shoot. You know, you take advantage of it. And so I was walking down the hill and I thought to myself, this might be a great opportunity to hire great people, salespeople. And I thought about it. I said, what, I call it possibility spotting. What companies, what industries are really struggling? And like your Brent friend's company, I thought to myself, event companies, right? You know, corporate events, sports tickets. So I actually went to my little office where I'm actually here now. I went online and I reached out to about 100 people who sold sports tickets, you know, enterprise level sports tickets to people at the Utah Jazz, mm-hmm. Miami Heat, all these different companies, because it's very difficult to hire salespeople, great salespeople.
Oh, yeah.
But I figured all these people were out of a job and we ended up hiring 6 people. My wife thought I was nuts. She's like, how are you?
You're hiring people when everybody else is trying to figure out how to let people go.
Right. You're trying to, you know, and so, but she's like, hey, you know, if this is what you think is going to work, let's go for it. And I did. And out of those 6 people, I think, and that was 2020, early 2021, 4 of them are still with us. And it was, again, I was thinking about working within your constraints and what you can do about it. And so I was able to attract some great talent during that time by making the best out of it. And as far as leading during uncertain times, whether it's COVID or anything else, I think it's really important as leaders, Jeff, to be transparent, be as transparent as possible. Because if you're not transparent, people are thinking in their heads, well, what's really going on? You know, is Learn It going to go out of business? Is Damon going to fire me? But if you're as transparent as possible, at least you get everything on the table with people, right? Everything on the table. And then I also think it's really important to over-communicate, you know, and through different channels, through email, through text, through whatever. You know, keep connected with your people. And one of my idols is Winston Churchill. And, and how he
greatest politician who ever lived.
I love yep. I you know, and how he handled the Battle of Britain, you know, and where he would get up there and he'd make these speeches and he would be direct. He would share the facts, right? He'd say, this is not looking good, but this, and this. But he'd always leave by being positive, you know, not sugarcoating it, but like, we're going to make it through because we're going to do this, and this. And I try to emulate that with business. I try to be as transparent as possible, over-communicate, but then be positive about it. Like, here's our game plan. Here's our roadmap to make it through.
I'm writing this down. Damien Lemby is the Winston Churchill of business. That would be a great compliment
that
to
would be,
anybody.
Yeah. I mean, I've read a bunch of Churchill books. I just really admire. He reminds me a little bit of my dad in the sense where he's kind of a bigger than life kind of person. Yeah. Some people would laugh at him, you know, but at the end of the day, Jeff, Winston Churchill saved the world.
Single-handedly, yes.
He saved the world in World War II.
Of all of the politicians everywhere in the world, all times that I've studied, no one is more impressive to me than Winston Churchill for the reason you just said it. He single-handedly held the entire free world together, and he did it all by raw courage and will when the rest of the world and even his country was saying, we just need to throw our hands up and quit.
And they just wanted to give in, right? Yeah. And so for all Neville Chamberlain and all those guys, they just wanted to give in. And so for all your listeners out there, go out, pick up a Winston Churchill book or go see the movie The Darkest Hour.
Right.
I mean, it's amazing.
One person can literally change the course of the world if you have the kind of courage and tenacity that Winston Churchill had. That's why I said being called the Winston Churchill of anything would be, you know, one of the greatest compliments you could send my way.
Oh, of course.
All right, we only have a little bit of time, but, you know, life has been up and down. It's been up and down in baseball. It's been up and down in business, but you've also had some ups and downs in your health, and you got some bad news and some news that there's nothing you can do or anybody else can do to change it. And in the process, you made a comment right before we started recording that I think is probably the most profound thing that I've heard in a long time. So talk about your eye condition and talk about how you choose to deal with your eye condition.
So around 2015, I think it was, I was playing basketball and I noticed the ball would get on me quicker. I would misjudge rebounds, and then I'd play tennis and I had blind spots. And so I went to a regular eye doctor and they said, well, you got to go see a retina specialist. So I went and saw a retina specialist, and sure enough, I was diagnosed with a progressive eye condition, which effectively could take away your complete central vision, you know, peripheral vision.
You can only
see
out of your peripherals after that, right?
Yeah. You can only see out of your peripherals after that. And obviously when you first get told that, especially since it wasn't really that bad in 2016, it's kind of like, well, what are you talking about? But anyways, so it's progressed over the years, and it's difficult for me to unfortunately read books, you know, regular books.
Spreadsheets must be a nightmare for you.
Yeah. Drive, which I didn't like driving, so that's not that bad. But yeah, it's heartbreaking because I can't play catch with my son, you know, stuff like that. But at the end of the day, and it's kind of like what I told you before, well, what can I do about it? I mean, there's nothing I can do to change it. And so I think you have a choice in life, and my choice in life is to make the best out of it and to live within the constraints you have. And if you can't change it, why focus on the negative? Focus on the positive. I do a lot of talks for Foundation of Fighting Blindness to help other people who recently diagnosed and things like that. And everybody, Jeff, has something, right? You know, sure, people have cancer, people have died. You've seen unbelievable things in war. So I choose not to be a victim. I choose not to feel sorry for myself. I don't. And you just have to make the best of it. And so you live within your constraints. You find ways to get around it. And it's also incredibly humbling. You take your eyesight, and it's something that you just take it for granted. You take it for granted. And it's one of those things where if I want to look at it from a positive perspective, it makes you slow down quite a bit, right? Because it slow down in the sense that, you know, I have to be more careful with where I walk or what I do.
Sure. Slow down just going down the stairs, right?
100% slow down going down the stairs. And, you know, it makes me you know, maybe at some point I won't be able to see my kids' faces, right? But it makes you, at this point I can. So it just, I do a better job of leaving things at the office, I think, than I used to. And it helps me be more present. So as, you know, as bad of a thing it is, it is what it is. I don't feel like, I'm not one of those guys who say, why me? Why does this happen to me? Why not me? Could it be anybody? But I, you know, it's a genetic condition that I have, and it's something where I want my kids and my family to see me handle it, you know, in a way that makes them proud and not a victim, or prevent me from doing anything in life that I wanted to do. And so I don't go around talking about it a lot. I don't lead with that. I'm sharing with it because this is, you know, I've listened to some of the episodes on your show, and people have a lot of challenges. And for your audience out there, if you have, if you get diagnosed with this type of condition or a major setback in life, hey, you got to do the best you can do, right? And if there's something you can't change, take that energy, instead of being negative, focus it on the positive, and just live your life.
Damon, we've talked about a lot of things, from baseball to business today, but as the CEO of Learn It, as the leader of the Learn It podcast, there's a lot that I want people to hear from you. But the one lesson that I want them to learn from you is what you just said. Life just threw you a curveball that you cannot duck, you cannot avoid, and you're not going to be able to hit. There's nothing that you can do to undo what's happening with your eyes. Even the, you know, the greatest advancements in science are not fixing this for you right now. And there are lots of people that are going to get thrown a curveball in life, and as a result, they're just going to sit down in the dust and throw their hands up and say, well, that's it. All of my dreams, all of my future's over with. I don't deserve this. And it's not, you know, it's not my fault. And maybe you don't deserve it. Maybe it's not your fault, but you 100% control how you react to it. And many people who got diagnosed with what you got diagnosed with, Damon, their life would take a radical turn for the worst. And what I heard you say is, what choice do I have? I'm going to face it. I'm going to give it everything that I've got, and I'm going to learn how to adapt because I don't have another option. And maybe in the process, your family's going to see something. The people at your company are going to see something that will carry with them, not in business, but carry with them for the rest of their life, just because of the way they're watching you deal with something that you have no control over.
Thanks, Jeff. And you're right. I mean, if it's out of your control, it's out of your control.
Yeah, but you do have control, 100% control over how you react to it. And one of the things that makes you unbeatable, Damon, is the way you've chosen to react to this. Because
yeah, you're right.
Many
you're
people
right.
wouldn't.
You do, the condition, I want to rephrase that, the condition's out of my control. I have 100% control of how I want to react and how I want to move forward to it. And nobody can take that away. No eye disease or anything can take that away from me. It's in my control to handle it the way in a positive and in a way that will show my kids and my family and my employees, and hopefully it benefits. If I could even help one person listening to this or anything else feel like, hey, I'll get off my couch and stop feeling sorry for myself, then that's a win for me.
Yeah. There's been a dozen unbeatable comments in this interview with you today. But the one thing that I want everybody to go home with is what you just said. You are 100% in control of how you respond to what just happened to you. Maybe you had a death in the family. Maybe there was a divorce. Maybe it was some catastrophic event that you didn't bring on yourself. But you do have 100% control over how you respond to it. And the truly unbeatable people say, I'm just going to figure out how to get up, dust myself off, and get back in there. It's going to look different. I don't have a choice, but I am going to get up and get back in there. I'm not going to let this thing beat me. And that's what I respect, man. That's what I admire in people like you, Damon.
Thank you, Jeff. I appreciate it.
There's so much more that I wish we had time to talk about, but we don't. So people who want to know more about your company, want to know more about you, Before we talk about your podcast real quick, how do they find out more about you and about Learn at the company?
So connect with me on LinkedIn. I'm pretty active on LinkedIn. So Damon Lemby on LinkedIn. My website is learnit.com. For you listeners out there, if you find a class you want, send me a note on LinkedIn. I'll send you a code for a free class or like $250. So take advantage of it. Yeah. And then, yeah, I'm the host of a Learn It All podcast. Jeff, I hope you'd come on my show. I interview a lot of great leaders who have great stories. And I've really enjoyed doing that over the last year or so. I've met great people and made a lot of great friends.
I'd be honored to be on the show. You've said the same thing that I've said. The privilege of being on leading this podcast is just the stories that I get a chance to hear. And I hope to encourage everybody else like they do me.
And so many great learning lessons.
Yeah. Thanks for being on the show, man. I've written down a bunch of notes from you, and I hope we get a chance to talk again real soon.
Thank you, Jeff.
Wow. I have so many thoughts, so many feelings, so many quotes from Damon. I don't even know where to start, but I do know this. The way that he approaches hardships is absolutely unbeatable. When stuff happens and you can't control it, you can't stop it, I hope you will decide you are 100% responsible for how you respond to those challenges of life. And maybe the most important thing that I heard from Damon all during this entire interview was, what choice do I have but to just face it head on and give this challenge everything that I've got? And if that's true for Damon's medical condition, it's true for you. It's true for me. It's true for all of us whenever stuff comes our way. So if you're going to be unbeatable, you decide 100% how you're going to respond to problems that are out of your control and over your head. And I hope you were as inspired by Damon as I was today. Thanks for joining me. I also want to remind you, we're just about ready to bring this podcast to a close, but we're not going to stop connecting with people online. We're going to stay connected through the Unbeatable Army. You're welcome to join that list. Just go over to unbeatablearmy.com. That will continue into the future. We're also going to stay connected on social media. And if you want to get connected now, you can go ahead and find us by just searching at Unbeatable Podcast. Put that in the search in just about all of the social media platforms, to include LinkedIn, and you'll find us out there on social media. But you're also going to find our fan of the week. This is Kim Thompson Miller. And Kim is one of those amazing folks that stay connected with us and highly engaged with us during the week. So Kim, we want you to know you're awesome. You're so awesome that we declare you to be the fan of the week this week. Thanks, guys, for joining me for this second to the last episode of Unbeatable. Come back next week for the grand finale. I'll see you then. God bless.
These stories of triumph over adversity will help you handle your toughest days in life and become unbeatable.